He looks a bit like Joe Rogan, doesn't he?
Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
Welcome to episode number 2. This is Jared. I'm your host of the Attitude Series podcast. And, you know, this month we've got a pretty exciting guest on here. I've known him for well and truly over a decade.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been over a decade. And we'll probably get into more about that a little bit later on. Not in Australia. Came over here at age 3 from Scotland. So he's got a Scottish background. We might hear a little bit about that as well. Pretty dynamic individual. He's written a couple books. He's working on his third. He's a personal trainer. He's a group trainer. He's spent 21 years in the military. He's also received an Order of Australian Medal, and just one dynamic guy. But he's had a very rich life, and continues to live that type of life. And we're very excited to have him here as our second episode. So please welcome Tom.
Thanks very much. Thanks, JD. I'm pleased to be here.
Thanks for being here, buddy. Thanks
no
for being here.
No problems at all.
So, Tom, tell me, how are you doing today?
Good. I started early this morning. I generally get up about 4 a.m.
Yeah.
And
4?
4 a.m., yeah. I wake up at 4. I'm just across the road from the beach. I'm not sure if you know where I live, but I'm right on Sutton's Beach. So I get up about 4. I have a PT session at 5 a.m., a shared PT, so it's not just one-on-one.
Yeah.
Shared PT, that finishes at 6. I had an hour. I had a gentleman come and visit me to talk to me about body scans and some other business that he's keen on doing. And then at 7, I have a one-on-one PT. So I finished that. I went home. I had an acai bowl, and I jumped in the car, and I came here.
What was that again? A what?
Acai bowl.
Acai bowl.
An acai. A-C-A-I. It's a fruit bowl.
Oh,
fruit
gotcha. Bowl with okay. There you go.
So maybe I haven't said it right, but I had a fruit bowl and then I came here. So it's a fair hike here. But I'm pleased to be here. It's nice to see you.
Awesome. Great to see you too. Well, welcome. I want to talk a little bit about, first, you know, when I said Tom's from Scotland, came over here at age 3, just to get a little bit of background of where you came from, where you've been, and how you got up to this point right now, even growing up in Western Australia. Can you share a little bit about that story?
Sure. Well, I was born in Glasgow, in Scotland. My sister and I came here with our parents in 1958. We came on the £10 immigrant, so it cost £10 to get out here. And basically the reason we came here is because my father and my mother wanted a better life.
Right.
Better life, more opportunities. The land of opportunity was Australia. And we settled in Geraldton in Western Australia, and I did all my schooling in Geraldton in Western Australia. And we had, as everyone has, we have a story. My upbringing was fairly harsh. There was 3 children in the family. One was an Aussie, so one was born over here. I had a fairly harsh upbringing, very disruptive lifestyle. And my father was an abusive type of character, and I tended to wear most of that. But my poor old mum died at 43 years of age, and mum was riddled with cancer and a few other things and had a terrible old life. But I joined the army. After that, I joined the army. I got married. I joined the army. And then I really never looked back. My life in the army was something that really suited me. I had lived a very disciplined life.
Yep.
So the discipline in the army wasn't an issue for me. And it was structured. And it also gave me the opportunity to do as best as I possibly could. In the army, even today, I think, it's not so much how intelligent you are. It's more about attitude, and that would impress you. So even the dullest person can do quite well in the military, provided they have the right attitude. And I wouldn't say I was the dullest, but I certainly wasn't the smartest. So the military suited me.
Hey, well, thanks for sharing that. Thanks for that. And 21 years, that's not simple, because some people, I mean, obviously, you know, you get a chance to keep staying in the military, but why 21 years? How did you figure that one out?
When I joined the military, it's a different story now. You could join for 3 or 6 years.
Yep.
And by the time I joined the army, I was actually an electrician. I had been through an apprenticeship in Geraldton in Western Australia. And the real reason I joined was to continue on that electrical apprenticeship in the military, which was extra money for me. But the military and the army in their own particular way convinced me to join and jump across, but I never jumped across. I just got into the military and loved the lifestyle, loved the camaraderie, the sort of thing that impresses you as well as a lot of there's a lot of testosterone around, there's a lot of challenges, there's a lot of activities you can do, and you can better yourself and gain confidence through the activities in the military. Not for everyone, but it really suited me.
How do you think that shaped where you're at today?
I think a lot of people will say that the Army shaped them. I think I was more or less suited for the Army. Yeah. So my upbringing and my lifestyle and the fairly harsh environment that I lived in suited me to join the military, and it wasn't that much of a drastic change. As an example, because of the tendency to have a softer lifestyle these days, I think it's harder for young men and women when they go into the military because of the discipline. Whereas the standards that were set for me in my family life and the military were much closer together. So it wasn't as drastic a change for me.
You're right. And we can touch upon that too. You know, talking about softer lifestyles, because things are softer. Every generation is getting softer, and probably because of technology and mom and dad and all the different things. But yeah, I can see where you got that correlation between your childhood, growing up, and moving into the military, and it just seemed like a seamless transition.
And a family history, as indeed you have. I had a family history, so I was influenced by my aunties and uncles and my father.
Yeah.
And so for me, it wasn't a natural thing to do, but it was right at the time. And I decided to stay on.
Excellent. So as a kid growing up, who were some of the, and maybe it didn't happen until you got into the military, but who would you believe were probably some of the strong influences that you had?
Well, my mother was a MacGregor. My mum and dad both being Scots. My mother was a MacGregor, and she wanted me to be a boxer. My father wanted me to be a footballer. Now, when I say football, I'm talking soccer, which has become very popular in Australia now. But in those days, it wasn't. It was mainly played by immigrants and WOGs, as we used to call them. So all the Italians and the Greeks.
Yeah.
But my mother's influence was on boxing. So I took up boxing. And actually, my uncle was an Englishman. He was a Cockney. And he used to train me. So I can recall him driving his old car around the place, and me running and doing a lot of track work as a young man. And eventually I got to the Golden Gloves in 1967 in Perth in Western Australia. But the passion for me was really in football, and I was pulled between the two. I liked the boxing training, and still do to this day, but I enjoyed the football as well.
So the beep test, you've done that a few times?
I've done a few beep tests, yes.
What was your best beep test?
13.
13?
13, and you may recall... When I say 13, 12, 8, 12, 9, so I'm stretching it a little bit there, but I was at Spectrum Gymnasium at Launton at the time, and we used to do the beep test fairly regular.
Yeah, I sit there, and the first thing I equate to soccer or football is the beep test, and I think about, you know, we hear stuff like, I don't know, David Beckham getting up to 17 or 18. Somebody's got some crazy, ridiculous score. But I find that interesting, because that was one of the things I got a kick out of doing, because I could run. But I didn't run as well as some of the other guys there.
What was your best beep test?
Maybe 11.5, I thought.
I'd be better now.
You think?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So you're a lot better now.
That was, there was a guy, Dave Winnett.
Yes.
Yeah. So we were always chasing Dave, right?
Well, Dave could do his 2Ks in 7.58, 7.59, so it's pretty fast.
Yeah, and a Cameron. There's a guy named Cameron.
Cameron would do the same. Cameron's still around. I hear from Cameron from time to time. He's still around, but he was very fit too.
There you go. Yeah, awesome. So boxer, soccer, I was sitting there thinking about so those early days at Spectrum Gym, which just – You had an environment. I guess when I first met you, when we think about over a decade ago, when I first met you, I came to you at a point in my life where I needed somebody to kick my ass, and that was only because I was overweight, doing all the wrong things, and wasn't personally looking after myself. So I was attracted to you because of that hardcore direction to say, hey, listen, I need you here two days, 3 days, 4 days a week. This is what you're gonna do in that group environment. Have you found that is probably some of the most beneficial environment for newcomers when they come on board to be in that group scenario, somebody controlling the whole show?
Yeah, I do. It's interesting that you say that, because there is a core group of people that enjoy that and like that.
Yeah.
And I was speaking to you before we came on air about how I'm interested in people getting out and doing exercise themselves and being more active. And some people need to be pushed. And some people will push themselves, and I know I need to be pushed. I can go out and do a run, and often I'll say, oh, I'm going for a 10K run. I end up doing five. And the good voice and the bad voice on the shoulder tell you what to do, and eventually you succumb to one of them. But people respond. And the thing about being controlled, whether it be in a boot camp or any sort of environment, is that you often get more out of the people than they would themselves, simply because you can push them that little bit further. And there is an art to it. There's definitely an art to it, because, of course, you can go overboard and you can push people too far. So from my perspective, the boot camp issue is very good, because whilst it is a group environment and a group activity, you have to look after the individuals as well. So you have to have an individual focus on what people can and can't do.
Yeah, totally. I get that. And when I think about this too, I also was reflecting on you have done, you know, it almost feels like you were starting this before Spartan races, before Tough Mudders, before any of that. You know, you taking your military training and then transferring it into the civilian social network side of things, and being able to train people. And this is all before, like, your commando, the boot camp. I mean, even showing up at Spectrum Gym, I don't know how much money they spent, but obviously putting cargo nets and all that. I loved that. And you were doing that before everybody else was kicking into these boot camp sessions.
That's true. That is true. And it wasn't that we saw ourselves as pioneers. It was just simply a transition from me from the military. And the CEO of the gym at the time and of Spectrum thought that would be the best way to utilize me. I was managing the gym, but I wasn't going to be a gym instructor and work in the gym. And often we would be running around the gym and you would see the people who were gym attenders looking at us. And quite often a lot of our recruiting was from gym members who would come out and see us. But you're right, it was a transition. And it was really transferring a lot of that knowledge from the military and making it acceptable to civilians. So obviously you could go overboard, and we weren't doing that. Whereas now there's certainly a lot of very, very tough mud runs, Tough Mudders and the likes around the place, and they take the extreme. You do the extreme stuff yourself, the trail running and the extreme stuff yourself. But in that day, it was not quite as severe, but it was a transitional thing, if you like, from the military training. And a lot of people were attracted because of the ex-military. And there's a lot of people that aren't ex-military that run them and do very, very well as well, of course. But the experience from the military held me in good stead, for sure.
Yeah, and rightfully so, because it hooked me. It hooked me for that time period. And I can remember, you know, as you went through and you graduated people and you shut down a season, and, you know, that was a launching platform for a lot of people to do other things. I saw people that wanted to, we met a very interesting, you introduced us to a super dynamic guy, which was a guy named Mal, who had lost a whole bunch of weight. He was a 3-time heart attack victim, you know, and then he became a marathon runner.
Yes.
Do you remember that?
Of course. He was a lovely man, and he had a magnificent story. He had a terrific story. Well, you're right, but I mean, look at yourself, your transition, which may not have started there. You had the nucleus of your fitness, and you were a fit man early on at some stage, but as you say, you got caught up in business.
Yeah.
There was a lot of pressures on you. And your family business, your dad was there, your family was there. And then, of course, you needed to get fitter, and you used us. We were lucky, because you provided a lot for our group as well, because there was a lot of that.
There
American,
was a whole lot of stuff going back and forth.
There was,
like,
a lot of that American enthusiasm and a lot of the old Marine stuff coming through from your dad, which was beneficial for our group as well.
Yeah.
And that's the sort of, you've mentioned a couple of people already, but those sorts of people really add. And once you get into a group environment, these group characters and dynamics come out and they add to the overall mix. It's a fantastic thing.
Yeah, I do love that. I love cheering, I love clapping, and you know what, sometimes the kids in the family, they're like, if you show up at an event to watch me on stage, Jared, I don't want you to say anything, because you'll be the loudest in the audience.
Well, it's good, and the reason it's good is because it's genuine.
Yeah.
So it's genuine, it's not a manufactured thing, and a lot of people can tell the difference from that. And I do recall a story where I had to ask you to tone it down a little bit, simply because at 5:30 in the morning, running around with Marine Chance wasn't very impressive for some of the locals.
Oh, that's too funny. Well, what we should get into, because this is really your forte, the whole physical fitness, health, well-being, and you've been doing it for so many years. You've got a lot of information. But one of the key things, just talking about society today and where it's heading with health and what you're seeing today yourself out there?
Well, it's really interesting. I could go on for a long, long time about this because I am passionate about it. And I guess if we have to go back a little bit in time, maybe to your father's era, perhaps to your grandfather, when people didn't necessarily go to gyms. My father never went to a gymnasium in his life. My grandfather certainly wouldn't have. And I think the explosion of gyms in this day and age, the current day and age, is simply because we've forgotten the art of incidental exercise. For example, and I often wonder whether it's only me that sees the irony in this, you could often see people go to the airport and they pull out a handle and they pull their luggage. No one carries luggage anymore. They get to an elevator or the stairs and they go up the elevator. And you will see people in some of the largest airports in the world and they go on these travelators, which can go for 300-400 meters. At the end of the travelator, there's a massage chair. So they use the massage chair to massage their legs because they haven't been walking. And I just look at them and I think, if you simply walked, used the stairs, exercised as you're supposed to do, you wouldn't need to use the massage chair at the end of the travelator. And I just see that as, I just find that extremely funny.
It is funny, Tom, because I heard you also talk about it somewhere where you're like, people look at you funny when you go to a building that's got stairwells and you're looking for the stairwell instead of the elevator.
Yes.
Yeah.
And an interesting story, we were in Dubai and we were in a hotel in Dubai, 7 stories up. And we would always look for the stairs. And of course, because it's a predominantly a tourist place, that everybody uses the elevators. And I asked the young man at reception if I could use the stairs, which they just happen to use for staff training and storage and so on and so forth. So they're not all that well used. And my wife was with me and Margaret was carrying a couple of pounds at the time. And he said, do you want to use the stairs because your wife's fat?
How did that go down?
Well, Margaret laughed. He didn't say it to offend. He was just very direct. And I guess there's something lost in translation there. But the fact of the matter is we were using the stairs because we wanted to maintain fitness whilst on holidays, enjoying ourselves, but still understanding the need to exercise. And so back to your original question, I fear for society these days because we seem to be getting rid of all the means that we can possibly exercise throughout the day and then compensate by going to the gym for an hour of an evening. And we're told by some of the scientists that's not enough. That is not enough. You cannot sit down for 8 hours a day on your backside, let your body slow down to the extent that it's clogging up, simply to go to the gym for an hour, 4 times a week. It's not enough. You need to move. And so I'm lucky that that suits my personality where I can't stay too long in one spot and have to move anyway. But I advocate people getting more into incidental exercise. And you do not necessarily then, therefore, have to program exercise. It's something you get naturally or incidentally through the day.
It's a habit, right?
Yes.
And it's about forming those habits. And I all I can say is that I feel grateful that I got some habits, and I'm not going to go into my later part of my life going, oh, geez, I'm ballooning up, I'm eating the wrong shit, and, you know, like,
yes,
I've got these problems. I know why I would have problems. I got problems because I'm carrying too much weight. I got problems because I'm not eating the right food. I got problems, you know.
So. And you accept that. There's a lot of people that don't. It's society. It's the fast food people to blame. It's the soft drink people to blame. It's everything else to blame.
It's the medication.
The medication I'm on. It's hereditary. It's hereditary.
Yeah.
I'm going to be like that. And
quite often... He's big boned, right?
Yes.
He's a big boned kid.
We succumb to these things, don't we? It's excuses. They're excuses. I mean, you have a man that has no legs and he can do the Kokoda track.
There is no reason, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's interesting. That's interesting. So what are you doing yourself to influence your part of the world?
That's a good question. I try as much as I can. I could do more, I guess. But one of the things that I do is, obviously, I'm still running my business. I'm a sole operator. I run Tom's Law personal training and group training. But I run free programs. So, for example, every Sunday we do a walking program. So
Watch out. You're going to blow up this podcast, free programs. You're going to get people wanting to contact you and figure out how to get a hold of Tom.
Well, we do that. Well, it's, if you like, it's an introductory thing to exercise. So people gather on a Sunday morning, 6 a.m., and off we go for a walk. So it's very social, and people can go at their own pace. So you want to walk with Billy Bob, and he goes fast, then off you go. You want to walk with Mary Lou, she's a little slower, then that's the way it is. It's not particularly structured, it's more social, but it gets people interested in exercise from other than exercise benefits, of course, there's the social aspect, there's the psychological aspects, there's all sorts of things, but it gets them interested in exercise. And in some instances, it gets them reinterested. They have been interested in exercise at some stage and they've lost it. They've got out of the habit of exercising. So we do that. I put out a weekly newsletter, and there's about 1,400 people get the newsletter. There's only about 300 or 400 active exercisers with me, but I put out a weekly newsletter to try and encourage people. In that newsletter, I highlight the exercise programs around the place that are free, the local government programs that are free, the exercise equipment that council are putting up around the place now, which are very, very good.
How great is that?
Yes.
Seriously, you can go just about anywhere and you can find these set up.
Yeah, look, excellent. And I know in various forms they are done all around the world, but I think we're very, very lucky here. I work with a couple of people at North Lakes, an area you know well, and they even have pneumatic machines. They are pneumatic machines, hydraulic, that you can adjust. These are park community equipments, and they've just put them out. They're fantastic. So the opportunity for people to exercise is greatly increased, and I'm trying to highlight that and get people to use them.
That is great. Yeah, the other day, my wife, Nicole, she took Tom down, and they went walking the dog, and they went, because we got some trails and area around here, and once again, they've just recently, in the last couple of years, they've just lined up a whole beautiful area where they've got these machines everywhere, and you start to see people out there and using them. And right now, this is the perfect time of the year, isn't it?
Well, if I've got time to tell you a little story, I'm working with a group of people, and on Thursday I'll do my last session. I've been doing it for 10 weeks. The council pay me to run these programs, and there's about 8 or 9 people. And they come to this particular set of equipment, which is at Scarborough, which is across the road from Morgan's, a well-known seafood place.
Great, great, great punch.
Yeah. So we exercise them. We've been exercising for some time, and they're very enthusiastic. And I've showed them how to use the equipment and little tips and hints, for example, chin-ups and pull-ups. Not a lot of the elderly can do them, but I've shown them how you can do a preliminary one and eventually get yourself to the extent that you can do it or part thereof. So we've got a good little group there. So I've suggested to them that on Thursday when I finish that they continue on exercising. So they've got a email group on Facebook. They all talk to one another. They all will continue that exercise, and I'll visit them once a month to redo a program for them. And it's fantastic. So I've written to council. I've told council this is the case. Great outcome for council. And so in that small community, we've polarized 8 or 9 people and their families, and hopefully that can grow, and they build this little community around exercise.
You have no idea how much of an effect you've had on people, do you?
Sometimes you do, sometimes you do, and sometimes you don't. So there is times, from time to time, people do mention it, but I think generally you just go through what you're doing, and as we all do and see, and you know, you've affected people, you've affected me, you've affected a lot of people, but you don't always recognize that you do that. Yeah.
Yeah, if you would have asked 10 years ago, hey, you know what, I reckon I might be sitting down with JD. I know you say JD. You're one of the very few guys on the planet that call me JD. So when I hear it, I know it's Tom. Nobody else, right? JD, it's one of the very few people. If you would have said 10 years from now, Jared, we're going to be doing a podcast, I'd be like, nah. I got other things going on, probably not doing it, but you just never know where things are going to lead you.
Yeah, but even so, whilst you probably speak about 10 or 15 years ago when you weren't at your fittest,
right?
You recognize the need to get fit. And whilst it's not specifically a fitness thing, it's certainly activity. I recall that you had in one of your offices a small 10-pin bowling lane.
Ah, yes. That's pretty funny now that you say that. Yes, we did have a 10-pin. We did stuff for salespeople. We had little funny competitions, and I had a 10-pin bowling thing set up. So when the salespeople came in, they would bowl for dollars, and they would be active.
But it was active.
Yeah.
It was involvement. And so I know that you were doing it predominantly from a business point of view, but people were being active, and they were doing things.
That's right.
From my perspective, that's what we need to do more of, the incidental stuff. I'll give you an example of my wife, and you know, she'll probably hear this and maybe get a bit annoyed, but women generally, if I can generalize, they'll go to the shopping center and spend 5 minutes doing laps to find a car park closest to the entrance. Whereas I would say, there's one over there, yes, but it's too far away. So we've lost the habit of parking and walking. And that's incidental exercise. And that's what we've lost these days. All too often, labor-saving devices are killing us.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's something that, look, if and all good points, because let's say from here on out, everybody that's listening to this, start parking three blocks away and walk. If that's the case, you know, you need to get that done. The exercise that we're losing out on, especially from, you know, I'll say from a personal standpoint, devices, you know, growing up as a kid, we were always on a, I was on a bike, I was out in the trails, I was building a fort, I was terrorizing the neighborhood, I was doing all kinds of crazy stuff.
And importantly, then, your parents let you.
Yeah, they did. They let me come, they let me, you know, yeah, all that stuff. We could probably go on a whole nother episode about the stuff that happened as a kid. Today, kids can get cooped up in their house, in their bedroom, on a device.
And if you take their iPad off them, then you're the worst parent in the world.
Hell,
and I understand
loose.
The pressures of that. I have grandchildren, I understand that. So to get them, but I don't think that you should give up on it. I think you just have to be a little bit more imaginative and use, for example.
How's that for a 2019 kickoff? That was Tom Law. Tom Law was on the Attitude Series, and that was only part one of a two-part episode. So next week, he'll be out there again. We'll put part two out. But if you really want to hear the rest of what Tom has to say, by all means, you can go straight to the YouTube channel, the Attitude Series. Check out the full interview right there. And if you do go on there, by all means, put some comments. If you're interested, you can always contact him. You can contact me as well about any of the information that he's sharing, his books out there. So lots of great information for everybody, everybody. Once again, this is Jared, your Attitude Coach. Thank you for listening, and I hope you guys are having a great 2019. Later.